The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
Well, resilience is certainly needed in these circumstances as our lives have changed dramatically all over the country. Gardaí are at checkpoints quizzing people as to where they're coming from, in some cases asking for addresses. Our next guest has penned a book on the history of the address. We spoke to Deirdre Mask earlier and I put it to her that addresses played a role in combating epidemics in the past, most famously cholera.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, one of the stories of cholera is really the story of a man called John Snow, who was a doctor, one of the early anesthesiologists. He gave anesthesia to the Queen, to Queen Victoria. But in his extracurricular activity was really trying to track down cholera. So remember, at the time, we didn't have the germ theory of disease. We were trying to just figure out, you know, where disease was coming from. People thought it was really just sort of bad smell. But John Snow had the accurate theory that it was being spread through water. And he was able to, through interviews and looking at maps, figure out that the cholera was coming from a very specific pump during an outbreak in Soho. And so the story is you take the handle off the pump and the cholera epidemic goes away. But one of the ways he was able to do this was because there was a registration system, a death registration system, that had street addresses of everybody who had died and how they had died. So he was very easily able to track where people were and also to navigate towards the pump. So in my book, I talk about how if you fast forward to 2010, when you had the Haiti earthquake and you had this, you know, terrible cholera epidemic that only really ended last year, you had this really odd problem that you didn't even have what John Snow had at the time, which was street addresses to track people down. So what John Snow was able to do in Victorian London is actually really difficult in huge parts of the world now.
I suppose, Deirdre, when we think of contact tracing in the current pandemic, yeah, mobile phones is perhaps, you know, the most convenient way of trying to trace and get in touch with people who have been in contact with others. But of course, yeah, when you look at it globally, there are big sections of the world where people still don't have addresses.
This is how actually one of the ways I got into the project, that people estimate that, you know, most people in the world don't have addresses, or at least don't have reliable addresses. So it actually becomes a really difficult way of finding people. I mean, huge parts of the world aren't even mapped. Just even for an ambulance, you know, when I was interviewing people without addresses, actually in rural United States, people were literally couldn't find their houses from an ambulance. You know, there was an ambulance driver who told me that they would ask people, can you hear the sirens? Are we getting closer? Are we getting further away? I mean, that's no real way of organizing yourself, especially in a pandemic.
Well, what is it about addresses and street names that in the past there has often been resistance to the introduction of them? People have even fought against it.
Yes, exactly. I mean, we sort of think of our street addresses now as being really useful to us, and they are really useful to us, especially at a time now. You know, you can get your deliveries, you can get your grocery deliveries. As I said, you can get ambulances. But they were never designed to help you. They were really designed to help the government find you, to help the government see you. So, for example, you know, in the 18th century, when a lot of house numbers, came into being, or the monarchs were counting people because they wanted to draft them or imprison them or tax them. Because if you can't find people, you can't do these things. You can't take great censuses. They really want to find you and track you down. And people then knew what was happening. They knew it wasn't for their benefit. And so people fought against them.
I mean, in some cases in the United States, people were even met with shotguns, weren't they?
Exactly. Yeah. So part of it is in a very rural part of the country. It was an addressing program I was tracking there. You know, and it turns out that people in rural modern United States, West Virginia, kind of knew what these 18th century Europeans knew, that when you give somebody an address, it's not really a neutral act. You're trying to find people and locate people, in some sense, control them, because then you can find them. So, you know, there are pros and cons to this, but it's useful to think about.
In an Irish context, Deirdre, when you look at the early 1600s after the conquest by the English of Ulster, in Tyrone they sent in their best map maker, a man called Bartlett, and inevitably the locals associated making and drawing up maps with new land, new ownership of land, new structures of ownership. So The guy was strung up. That wasn't necessarily uncommon in how people associate map making as a precursor to addresses.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, when you make a map of something, you're dominating, you know, you're saying you control something. You want to find people that you have this power. There's a lot of power in mapping and a lot of power in addressing. And people know this. And it goes back to your other question about being met with shotguns. I mean, it seems ridiculous. But actually, you know, there's a sense of if you have some ownership or some control, it actually is a really powerful point. And the Irish context is a great example of that, of how people understood that mapping and naming isn't just a neutral act.
Some people don't want to be judged by their address. Some people really do. And you have the idea of prestigious addresses. In New York, am I right in saying you can actually buy the address that you get to use?
Yes. I mean, there's a program set up in New York where you can apply. You have to apply and you pay $11,000 the last time I checked, which really isn't that much money for these developers. But you can apply to have your address be something that it's not. So, for example, let's say you're near Park Avenue, but you aren't actually on Park Avenue. This has happened quite recently. You can actually apply to have, you know, a Park Avenue address on your building that's not on Park Avenue at all. And actually, the city is sort of, you know, doesn't hide what it's doing. It's actually called the vanity address program. It's just a vanity address because we are judged by where we live and our addresses. I think anybody, wherever they grew up, can kind of map out, you know, their hometown about what were the expensive streets and what were the, you know, what were the streets that were considered the impoverished streets or where certain ethnic groups lived. And for better or for worse, we are judged on them. But the amazing thing about New York is that considering how expensive these apartments are, the fact that people still care that it's a Park Avenue address is kind of crazy when you're buying a $10 million apartment, that you still care that people see that you live on Park Avenue. It says a lot about the human condition, I think.
Deirdre Mask there, and that's all we have time for this week.